You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect. That was pathetic. Good morning. My name is Sean, and this is how I dress every day. But I am the lead pastor here, as you already know. And this morning, it is my privilege to have with me Natalie Snyder, who is an employee at a local bank. And I'm going to interview her and ask her some questions that I'd like you just to be a part of. So why don't we give it a hand for Natalie for being here. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Stall tactic. Okay, anyway. Hi, Natalie. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thank you for doing this morning.
No problem.
Someday I'm going to be able to read the notes that I have here. Hey, there we go. Technology is awesome. Well, anyway, Natalie, I want you to, and we've talked about this ahead of time, I want you to be... not to answer specifically about this particular question, but just yes or no would be good. Do you work for one of the following banks in town? Don't tell us which, because we don't want to, you know, just in case we're recording this, we don't want her to get in trouble or somebody else. But do you work for Juniata Valley, Kish, First National, or MCS, one of those banks?
Yes.
Okay, good. So she's a local person that works in the bank here. What is your position at the bank, Natalie?
I'm a teller.
Okay, you're a teller. So what do you do as a teller during the average day?
I take deposits, I cash checks, open new accounts, take a lot of complaints. Just everyday problems you might have, issues.
Okay, all right, good. How many customers would you say that you see daily?
Oh, somewhere probably between 20 to 150, depending on the time of the month.
Wow, okay, all right, sounds good. Let me see this next question here. All right, good. So what does a customer need to do? Nope, I just lost my question. Sorry. What does a customer need to do when they give you money? What is their responsibility?
Well, we like them to at least have an account number, but sometimes that's not possible. So I always need a name at least and tell me what they want to do with this money.
Okay. So then they fill out a deposit slip of some sort or some sort of form.
Yeah.
And they at least give you your name. Do you have to show ID with that?
Not usually if we're putting money in an account.
Okay.
All right. Back.
This next question is very important that you listen to the whole question before you answer it. Without giving us safe combinations, passwords, or other bank secrets, what do you do with the money when a customer gives it to you?
Oh, I put it in my drawer usually.
Okay. And what does that drawer look like? Describe
it. Cash drawer.
Okay.
Different denominations in it.
And you just place the money in the drawer.
I just place the money in there.
Okay. All right. So when you do that, at what point in that process do you put some of that money into your purse?
I don't do that.
Okay. So maybe you just have a box. Maybe it's not a purse. I understand. Not everybody carries purses. Maybe you just have a box that you put it in to take home.
No, I don't think so.
You don't do that.
Okay. No.
Okay, I was talking, so maybe you don't actually take it home. Right, sorry. She doesn't take it home. That would be inappropriate. Maybe you just have a place in the bank where you store it until you have enough money to go out and buy a car. So where's that storage place that you put customers' money?
Well, there is none. That we don't do that.
Okay, right. I mean, come on, we're in a technology era, right, folks? So it's not actual cash, paper money. So I guess that there's a point where you transfer money. So do you prefer to transfer customers' money into your checking account or into your savings account?
Well, I don't do either. I don't take the money.
Okay. Well, okay. So maybe it's not you personally. Maybe there's a staff vacation fund where all of the tellers transfer some of the customers' money to save up for a trip?
No. No.
You don't. What am I thinking? We are not in Beverly Hills here, folks, okay? Maybe you just have a staff petty cash box for you to use when you go out for lunch. So when do you put money into that from the customers? When do you put the customers' money into that petty cash? Is that before you write out the deposit slip or before you put the cash in the drawer?
We don't do that.
There's no box for cash for lunch?
There is no box for cash for lunch.
So wait, you're telling me that you or any of the staff, none of the staff, use customers' money for your own needs?
No.
Not even a little bit?
Not even a little bit.
Well, why not?
Because it's not our money.
Okay, if it's not your money, then why do you even have it?
We're just managing it for them. We handle it, put it in their accounts, just not our money.
So you can't do whatever you want with their money because it's not your money?
No.
You're just the managers?
Yes.
That's a good point. Well, thank you very much, Natalie, for her time. Why don't we give Natalie a hand? Bank teller extraordinaire. So thank you. You can just go back there and head back. So as you've seen, as you've heard, we are starting this series, and I'm in the dark. We are starting this series called Funds, and we're going to be talking about money. And money is one of these things that's kind of awkward to talk about as a church. Because some people, especially if, you know, people outside of churches or maybe from him within church, kind of assume that money is this thing that, oh, churches just say, give me your money, and it's all about money, all about wanting stuff. And so, you know, we're very careful how we talk about it, but we're going to use this month to be direct and talk about what God has to say about money. And as we do that, there's some things that we're going to share. And I want you to understand, too, that as we go into this series, there are some things that we're going to be talking about that definitely apply beyond just money. They apply to other things in life, and you'll see. But I want you to know that I'm purposely narrowing the focus this month to talk about money and to talk about how we use it. But the point that I want you to get today is this. As Natalie shared, her job as a teller is to manage other people's money. And here's the point that I want you to get. The point is, it's not yours. Your money is not yours. Okay, and I know that sounds really cruel and heartless, but as we'll see here, we'll look at God's Word of the Bible, what it has to say about it. But I want you to understand that your job is much like an employee at a bank. Your job is to manage money that has been entrusted to you. And like I said, this principle applies beyond just money. It applies to your stuff and to the gifts and abilities you have. But we're going to focus on money this month. But I want you to get that idea. And I'm going to keep drilling this over and over. And it sounds basic. It sounds simple because it is. But we don't get it because it's not yours. It's not mine. The money that you have, the money that I have, the money in our savings account, in our checking account, in our retirement account, in our box under our mattress, whatever, it is not yours. It's not mine. And we're going to look at a passage in the Bible today. It's kind of an obscure passage, and we'll kick the lights on. You can go to YouVersion, the app there, if you've got that. We're going to look in Psalm 50. Not chapter, but yeah, I guess it is. We're going to be in Psalm 50. Like I said, sort of an obscure passage in the middle of the Bible here. And while you're opening it, dude, I cannot believe. Glad I don't have to wear something like this every Sunday. How about it? Anyway, It's a passage. I want to give you a little bit of background, kind of set you up for why we're using this and what it means. But it's written by a guy named Asaph, and he was a guy. And we'll just leave it at that because I don't need to go into any background on that. Written by a guy named Asaph, and it was written as a warning to Israel. Now, I firmly believe that everything in the Bible was spoken directly by God to people who communicated it in writing. Actually, it was an oral tradition first. But the point being that everything we have in the Bible, even though it was written by Asaph, it was directed by God, supernaturally directed by him to include it. And it was a warning from God to the people of Israel. The people of Israel were having some issues, and we know, we've talked about them over the last few years at MC3, some of the different problems that Israel had. And of course, we're not like that. We never do things wrong or are stupid. But they had an issue. They were messed up at this point. And the issue was that they were worshiping God, but God was not pleased with their worship. Now, today we worship, we use things like singing to worship. We do use giving as worship. Right now, I would consider this a time of worship. But in the Old Testament, in addition to some of those things, they practiced sacrifices. And they sacrificed animals, they sacrificed different things in worship to God. And we did a whole series called Dwell, all about those different sacrifices. And the issue was that the people were doing the outward thing. They were doing the sacrifice, but they didn't have their hearts in it. Their hearts weren't there. And he was just tired. God was tired of the continuous sacrifices when there was no love or actual worship happening with it. And so this was a warning. And it's a theme that we see throughout the Bible, of this idea of honoring God with our lips, but our hearts are far from him. And we do the same thing. You know, you might have just sang through a bunch of songs right now, or sung through a bunch of songs right now, but, you know, might have been thinking about something else. And so your heart wasn't really there. So God is talking to the Israelites and explaining, you know, I'm tired of your sacrifices. Your sacrifices are meaningless because you're doing the outward thing, but your heart isn't there. And so right in the middle of this warning to Israel, of this explanation, is these couple of verses here that we're going to look at more in depth. But let me just read it right now, and then we'll look at it some more. This idea of not being ours, and it's God's ownership. God is writing, or Asaph is writing, but God is speaking in this part of the psalm. He says, I have no need of a bull from your stall or of goats from your pens. For every animal of the forest is mine, and the cattle on 1,000 hills. I know every bird in the mountains, and the insects in the field are mine. If I were hungry, I would not tell you, for the world is mine and all that is in it. See, this is, and we're going to break this down here in just a second, but this idea is that God owns it all. It's not ours. It's not ours. And so let's look at this. And the funny thing, God's obviously using a little bit of irony here with this idea of, you know, oh, well, we're helping God, and, you know, we're helping God out. And so that's what we're going to look at here. This idea the Israelites may be thinking, oh, you know, we're worshiping God. We're giving God, you know, our bulls and our goats and our sacrifices. We're helping him out. And the first thing I want you to see as we look at this is that God doesn't need our stuff because it's his. God doesn't need our stuff. Sorry, I got some font contrast issues there. But God doesn't need our stuff because it's his. He doesn't need our stuff. It's already his. It's like, I don't know. I mean, it's like a regifting gone bad. You know, where you're like, you get a gift one year from someone and you're like, oh man, I'm going to stick that under my bed and give it to somebody later. And then you wrap it up next year and you give it to the person that gave it to you. Oh, awkward. But that's kind of this idea. It's like, okay, hey God, here you go. You can have bulls and goats. And God doesn't need it because it's already his. He doesn't need these things. And so this is what he says in Psalm 50, looking at the first part of that verse. He says, I have no need. I have no need of a bull from your stall or of goats from your pens. For every animal of the forest is mine, and the cattle on 1,000 hills. I know every bird in the mountains, and the insects in the field are mine. See, God is saying, look, to the Israelites, and a principle that we can take away is that it is all his. The animals, he doesn't need these animals. He's not going, oh, man, I hope they worship a bull today. Yesterday was a calf, and it was like, eh, is a calf a bull? Are they the same? No? No? Okay. All right, let's be clear. Oh, it was a pig yesterday, and I know a pig and a bull are different. So, oh, God, you know, oh, man, I got a pig yesterday. I hope I get a bull today because I really need one. And that's what he's saying. Like, their hearts were messed up in their worship, but God was just making a general principle. Like, I don't need, if you think that you're worshiping with this bull and this goat, There's probably a principle there too. The God doesn't need your bull, okay? There. He says, he doesn't need it. It's already his. And so there's a couple of things here. You know, this word, he says, I don't need a bull from your stall, a goat from your pens. Every animal of the forest is mine. Every animal. The word animal, the Hebrew word for animal there is animal. It means everything. It's not just some things. Every animal of the forest is mine. And I love this. And the cattle on 1,000 hills. Now, we live in a culture where most of us, and some of you are not part of this, but most of us do not own livestock. Most of us do not. And even for those of you that do, a livestock, if you had lots of property and you owned lots of cattle, you may allow them to graze out on a hill. See, so far, I'm just choosing my words carefully so they are all actually for real and make sense. I'm a city boy. And so if you had a cow, you might have, if you had a lot of cattle and you need a lot of land for them to graze, you might have, you know, a dozen hills. And if you think about a hill, if you look out over the mountains, you know, hills, it's a big space. If you drive up 322 and kind of look off of the side there, you see hills. If you drive through Big Valley, you see hills. And so, you know, a rich person might have a dozen hills for their cattle to graze on. And if they had that much space, they probably had a lot of cattle. And God is just kind of trumping this whole thing and pushing it up. Trump, that was a pun. He's pushing the whole thing up. Money, money, money. Anyway. And saying, look, dude, I've got a cattle on 1,000 hills. It's all mine. All the cattle, it's all mine. You think it's yours. You think it belongs to you, Israelites. You think your stuff is yours, but it's mine. He says, no matter how rich you think you are, I own it. It is mine. And the principle that we can take here is that no matter how much money you think you have, no matter how much stuff you think you have, no matter how safe or secure or whatever it may be, it's God's. He owns it. And here's a really cool word. He says, I know every bird in the mountains. And this word know is a Hebrew word, yada. We've talked about it a lot before because it means a lot of different things, but it's this idea of intimately knowing someone. It's the same word that is used when Adam slept with Eve and had a son, right? His name was two sons, actually, Cain and Abel. And that's the same word that Adam knew Eve, yada. It's an intimate understanding. And God is saying, look, I know every bird in the mountains. And we kind of looked at this last month. One of the passages that were in our prime group discussion guide, I think, was the idea of you know, God knows every detail about everything, every bird in the sky. And that's what he's saying here. He says, look, I know every bird in the mountains. I know them intimately because they are mine. I know what they're going to do right now. I know where they're going to fly. I know how their wings are going to open and how they're going to spread and what they're going to do to catch the wind so they can fly to the specific height that he knows that they're going to fly to because he owns it all. They're his. Those are his birds. Those are his cattle. Those are his everything. And then he says, and the insects in the fields are mine. Dude, God is saying here that he even knows things that we go, God knows them. God knows what's going on in their lives because those are his. And there was a millipede walking through the hallway there. I didn't step on it because it would have been a nasty splatter. But you know, God knows that millipede because they're his. Everything, all of these animals are his. And so this idea of the Israelites thinking, well, God, I'm going to give you some of my stuff. I'm going to give you my goats and my bulls because you need them, God. And God's like, no, I don't need them. And again, the principle for us is that we sometimes think, well, God, I'm going to give you some of my stuff. I'm going to give you some of my money because, you know, without me, you can't do anything. And I don't think we think that through that deeply with it. But I want you to get it that God doesn't need our stuff because it's his. God doesn't need your stuff. God doesn't need your money because it's already his. And the word is need there. God doesn't need your money. And we'll talk a little bit later about wanting. That's a whole different story, so don't go anywhere with that yet. But God doesn't need our stuff because it's his. And that's what he's saying in this passage to the Israelites. He's like, look, don't think you can come to me with just your stuff, with the things that you've got, with the amount of wealth that you have, because the cattle and these things were a sign of wealth. And we talked about during the Dwell series that God wanted the best of the best for the worship, for the sacrifice. And so he says, don't think that he needs this stuff because he doesn't. God doesn't need anything about you, anything that you have either, because he already owns it. Do you get that? And that's the issue. It's not because It's because he already owns it. It's already his. He knows the birds because they're his birds. He knows the cattle. He has the cattle in the Thousand Hills because they're his cattle. He knows the details about that stinking cricket that you can never find that makes that noise all night. He knows about that because it's his. It all belongs to him. So God doesn't need our stuff. He doesn't need anything from us because it's his. The second thing we can see here is that God, and this is kind of an interesting thought here. Am I breaking up? Am I kicking out? No? Okay. God doesn't need our handouts because it's his. God doesn't need our handouts because, and when I say handouts, our assistance. Hey, God, I'm here to help you out. I'm going to give you a hand, God. You need something from me. And hey, I'm here, God. Glad that I can help you. God doesn't need anything from us because it's already his. And this is what he says. That's supposed to be verse 12 there. The first part of verse 12 in Psalm 50, he says, if I were hungry, I would not tell you. He's saying, these are like, don't think that you need to feed me with your bulls and your goats, with your stuff. If I'm hungry, I'm not going to tell you. Why would he do that? He has the food. He has everything he needs. Why would he ask us, why would he ask the Israelites for something that he needs, for a handout, for something? Hey, God, you know, we're going to help you out, brother. We got your back, man. We're tight. And God doesn't need that because it's already his. If I were hungry, I'm not going to tell you. I mean, think about that. That's what he's saying. Like, he says he owns it all. So it would be foolish for him to be like, you know, gnawing on like a, I don't know, this is maybe inappropriate, but, you know, gnawing on a turkey leg or something, saying, hey, anybody got turkey? I need a hand. Anybody have anything? I'm hungry. Like, dude, no, God, you're already eating something. And that's kind of the point. It's already his. He's still not going to tell us if he's hungry, if he has a need, because it's his. Do you get that? And it's not yours. That's the point. And we're going to keep repeating this idea. But understanding that God doesn't need a handout from us. He doesn't need our help. He doesn't need to consult us and say, hey, you know, man, I'm feeling pretty famished right now. Or, you know, my bank account's a little bit low, so maybe you can help me out. Or, you know, whatever. I've got a need and I can't come through on my own. So if you can help me out, I would appreciate that. It's all his. And, you know, a lot of these concepts all run together. Some of the stuff we were talking about last month about God's will being done and his kingdom come. And this whole concept that he's in control of it all. And so he's not going to come to us and say, hey, can you give me a hand? I mean, think about it. It's sort of the idea, and I don't mean to sound disrespectful here, but it would be you walking through, and I know some of you guys are going to be going to Philly at the end of the week here. It'd be walking through downtown Philly, and there's a homeless guy there that is very clearly homeless. He's got the sign that says, you know, I will eat, I'm hungry, give me some food, whatever. And very clearly, like, not even one of those fakers, you know, they always talk about. But, like, this guy's got... He's in a bad place. And it would be for you to go up to him and say, dude, I'm hungry too. Can you give me something to eat? You know, what have you got? You got some gum on you? You got something? You know, you wouldn't do that. That would be cruel and wrong. And why would you ask someone that has nothing to give you something? And that's exactly the point that God is making here. Why would he ask us, why would he ask the Israelites for something when he already has it all? It's already his. It belongs to him. And so that's what God's saying. Hey, look, you know, Israelites, if you think that I need you to sacrifice, and that's why you're going through this ritual, you're doing this routine, because I need this food, because I'm hungry. He's saying, if I was hungry, I wouldn't even tell you. If I'm hungry, you know what I do? I eat. You know why? Because it's all mine. I've got whatever I want. He's got a buffet right there. He's got an instant click machine that dispenses whatever God wants. And this is obviously, God doesn't eat that way. He is, you know, but my point is that's the way it is. God's got it all instantly. Maybe he could just, you know, do the elbow thing and get food that he wants, because he doesn't need it and he wouldn't come to us. So the second thing we see in this passage is that God doesn't need our handouts. And so when we go into this, and again, we're going to touch all these things over the rest of the month, but don't think that we're, even when you're giving, I mean, we pass the offering buckets. You know, don't think that, oh, if I don't give, it's not going to work out. And I think this comes back to the heart thing, which I'm talking about stuff in a couple weeks from now. But if that's your attitude, don't give. Like, if you think that you're obligated or God needs your money, I mean, I've watched God come through. Well, and frankly, we are a living example of, like, how in the world are we paying our bills with us? Have you looked at you? I mean, have you looked at us? Like, seriously, how are we surviving? How is this happening? How are we able to do some of the incredible things that we are doing? And it's not because of how rich you are or how rich I am. It's because God owns it all. It's because of how rich He is. So don't think that we need to do stuff for God and help Him out, and He needs our handouts, and He needs our money, He needs our stuff. Because it's His already. Because it's His. The third thing we see in the passage there is that everything belongs to God because it's His. Everything belongs to God because it's His. It's His. It belongs to Him. He doesn't need our stuff because it's His. He doesn't need our handouts because it's His. Everything belongs to God because it's His. And that's what He says at the end of this passage in verse 12, second part of it. He says, "For the world is mine and all that is in it." The world. And this word, it's a Hebrew word, means world. It means everything. It means all the stuff. It means every person. The word sometimes refers to the peoples, to the things in it. So it's not just like He owns the terra firma, the surface, the geography, everything. And just in case you weren't sure what He meant by the word world, He says all that's in it. So everything is God's. The world is mine, is what He's saying, and all that is in it. Everything belongs to God. Because it's His. God doesn't need our stuff because it's His. God doesn't need our handouts because it's His. Do you get this idea? And it's basic, but it sets the foundation for where we're going, because so many times we think it's ours. We think it's mine. We think I earned it. We think I deserved it. We think I won it. Well, maybe you won the lottery or something. We think it's ours, but it's not. It is not ours. Your job is to manage it. Because the point is, it's not yours. 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 It's not. Your, everything, like, see my fancy suit? This is my wedding suit. Have to have a wedding suit if you're a pastor. And, dude, that's going to be a smelly wedding suit. What am I saying? Oh, like, why am I talking about this? Oh, because this isn't mine. This is God's. Everything we have is God's. Everything is His. Everything that you've got, everything that you are wearing right now, everything that you are enjoying in your home is not yours. It's God's. Everything that you eat is not yours. Everything in your checking account, your whatever, it is all God's. It's not yours. Our job is to manage it. We are no different than a bank teller. God has entrusted it to us, and our job is to manage it. So let's talk about some classic English literature, or just Hollywood movies. Either way, there's a character here that I'd like to introduce you to if you're not familiar. It's from the third Lord of the Rings movie called Return of the King. This fellow's name is Denethor. Anybody familiar with Denethor? Anybody? A couple of people? How many? Okay, now let's get the really smart people here. How many of you are familiar with it because you read the book? Oh, two, three. Oh, lots of, okay. So there's like three or four of you. But either way, we know who Denethor is. Denethor's title, he's not a very good-looking guy. He actually, I shouldn't say, he looks like my grandmother. When I knew her when I was a little bit, she kind of looks like him. And actually, she would probably have said that too, because, anyway. Okay, so Denethor, his title is Steward of Gondor. Steward of Gondor. And Gondor was the kingdom. Gondor was the name of the kingdom. For all intents and purposes, and all you like Anglophiles are like, well, no, actually it wasn't. Like, I don't care, okay? Just we'll just pretend. Okay, Gondor was the kingdom. And his job, as you can see, he's sitting, I don't know, you can't really see very well, but he's sitting on a throne. And as steward of Gondor, his job was to care for the throne because he was not king of Gondor. He wasn't prince of Gondor. Obviously, he wasn't queen of Gondor. Maybe. Maybe it's obvious. But he wasn't the queen of Gondor. Because he was not in the royal line. He was not part of the line of kings. And so, therefore, because there was a break in the line, I don't have time to get into all the stories, but essentially there was a break in the line. There was a gap between the last living king that was available to take the throne. And if you don't know enough about this, but maybe it's pretty clear that the throne is inherited. Unless it's taken by rebellion or by fight, for the most part, I mean, even throughout the Old Testament, the throne was inherited. It was passed from father to son, to the oldest son. Father to oldest son, father to oldest son. That still happens in England today, to the oldest, and there's just all this complicated stuff. Kendra was trying to explain it to me, but somehow that's how that, not Margaret Thatcher, she's the something else. What's that lady's name? Elizabeth. Elizabeth is the queen for some reason, but then William is the next in line, right? Yeah, and I don't understand all that. But he's related to her. I know that. I know that. He's like her grandson. Okay. So somehow it skips Charles, and I don't understand all that. But anyway, all I have to say is that the king, the throne, was always handed from family. It was from family to family to family. Again, there might have been a revolt. Or a coup, whatever you want to call it, and someone would take it by force, by military power, and take the throne. But then, once that family had it, they would pass it down through family. So the deal was, in the Lord of the Rings, at this particular time, in the kingdom of Gondor, in the realm of Gondor, there was no living king, they thought. Not to mess up the plot for you. It's called Return of the King for a reason. There was no living relative to claim the throne. So they hired the kingdom, the people, appointed, elected, whatever, this guy, Denethor, and his family to be the steward of Gondor. And what that meant was that he wasn't the king, but it was his job to take care of the kingdom. It was his job to take care of the throne, to make sure things kept running the way they should until a king was found or was born or however loud that works. But that was his job as the steward of Gondor. So his job was to take care of all that. He was to manage everything, to manage all the details, from how the palace was polished on the ground to, you know, what handouts were given to the slaves that lived out in the suburbs of the kingdom. And so his job was to manage all of that, and his role was steward. And that's what it meant. A steward was someone that was put in charge to care for something that didn't belong to him. And we have a fancy church word that we use called stewardship. And that's how we talk about money. That we are stewards, which is just another word for manager. Our job is to manage something that doesn't belong to us. And if Denethor here did a great job, people would be happy. Hey, look how well he's managing the king, or the kingdom. And at some point, the king would return and, depending on how well Denethor did, would be pleased or displeased with his job. Now, Denethor, and sorry if you haven't, the movie's like 20 years old or something. So if you haven't seen it by now, I'm sorry. I'm going to ruin the plot for you. Spoiler alert. The king did come. However, when the king arrived at the kingdom, Denethor was not too happy about it. Because his family had been maintaining the throne for so many years that he had been on the throne, but even though he wasn't officially the king, he wasn't too happy about it because it meant he would have to give up his kingdom that wasn't really his in the first place. And so there's this whole plot line about him getting angry and fights and burning and all sorts of stuff like that. But the issue was that Denethor was upset because he did not want to give up the kingdom to the king. To the king the kingdom belonged to, the rightful heir of the throne, the one that owned it all, and that Denethor was just the steward or the manager for, of, preposition. But Denethor, that was his job. Next month we're going to, November. Next month we're going to do a series called Merry Christmas, Now What? And we're going to look at some of the parts of the Christmas story that we always read and we know about, but we don't know what they mean because they're really important. But one of the things, and I don't think I'm going to talk about it too much next month, but one of the things that's very interesting about the story of the birth of Jesus, the story of Christmas. Do you remember who the king was at the time? Herod, right. Herod was the king. Herod was the one that was the king. And if you remember, there were some guys, some wise men, that came to Herod, the king, and said, Herod, where is the... Now, imagine who they're talking to. This is the guy on the throne. They're saying, Herod, where is the one who has been born? What was the word? If you're not from church, that's okay. You don't need to know this word, but many of us know the Christmas story. Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? So So these wise men are going to the king and saying, "Hey, king, where is the one who has been born king?" Herod was none too happy. If you remember the story, if you pay attention to it, he went out and killed a bunch of babies. That was his thing. He killed all the boys, the males, under a certain age because he was afraid of the one who was born king. Do you know why? You don't have to answer me. It's rhetorical. The reason was because Herod was not part of the official line of David. He knew that it wasn't his kingdom. Herod was upset because if there was one who was truly born king of the Jews, that meant Herod, and for all intents and purposes we'll say, that meant that Herod, as the steward of the throne, was about to lose what he had. So to keep that from happening, he just said, "I'm going to kill all the boys so that there will be no one born king of the Jews." And obviously, praise God, Jesus made it. But that's the story with Herod. That was why he was so upset. It wasn't just like, "Hey, that sounds like fun. Let's kill a bunch of boys." The issue was that it wasn't his throne. It wasn't his line. And the same thing with Denethor. His job was to manage it, was to care for the throne, to care for the kingdom until the true king returned. That's us. We are stewards of the kingdom. We are managers of what God has given to us. Because we already said, it's not yours, it's God's. It all belongs to Him because it's His. He doesn't need our help, He doesn't need our handouts, He doesn't need our stuff because it's His. But obviously there's a problem here. If it's all His, how do we have stuff? Well, because the King has entrusted it to us. He has given it to us. No matter how much or how little you have, it is because the King, God, has entrusted it to you. He has given it to you. And your job, my job, our job is to steward it, to manage it for Him, for His sake. So, I'm going to fly through the story. If you want to turn, you can turn your Bibles to Matthew 25 or YouVersion. Jump to Matthew 25, which is, you can probably do it faster than I can read anyway. I'm going to read a very familiar story. And I'm not going to go into it too much because Justin Beamer, one of our elders, taught this last summer, not a couple months ago, but a year ago in the parable series, and it was called, what was it called? I wrote it down so I wouldn't forget. Do you remember, Justin? Debt. Debt? No. Anyway, how that's important to know. Let's think about it. No, debt was what Scott taught, which, by the way, ties into last week's series. I talked to some of you about that already, that you can follow up that. Anyway, if you think about it, just throw it out there so people can find it online. I was supposed to give you a resource. Hey, let me help you out with something, but I can't tell you. But anyway, this is in Matthew 25, and Justin did a great job teaching this somewhere. but it's on mc3church.org. If you click on listen to the point, you can go to the parable series and find it. It's not sold. It's not debt. There's a third one. Anyway, but it's Matthew 25. So I'm going to read it. If you're there, you can follow along with me. But it ties this idea together. Jesus is telling this story. This is a parable, which meant it had a kind of an underlying meaning. There's a lot that was built into what a parable was. But essentially, Jesus was telling a story to the people that were listening to him. And he says, again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. Entrusted his wealth to them. So this man, this is a story Jesus is telling. So this man was getting ready to leave, but he said, okay, I'm going to be gone for a while, so I need to make sure that my stuff, my wealth, my property, my cattle perhaps, my actual cash, his home, whatever. He says, I need to make sure that it's taken care of when I'm gone. So he picked some servants, called them together, and said, I'm going to entrust my wealth to you. You are now going to be my managers. I'm going to give you the money, and it's your job to manage it, not to put it in your pocket, not to put it in your purse, not to put it in your vacation savings fund, but it's your job to manage it for me. And so he says, it says, and this is a different version just because it clears up the talent word a little bit. He says, to one, was it called talent? Maybe. Buried, lost, or debt. It's debt. It's neither of those. You did teach this, right? I wasn't there, so I know it was a long time ago. So Justin taught something. Just listen to the whole parable series. It's all good, okay? It's all good stuff. Anyway, So to one he gave 5 bags of gold, to another 2 bags, and to another 1 bag, each according to his ability. So there were 3 different servants there, and they each received 3 different amounts. It didn't say anything about this guy was better. It just said, you know, according to the owner, he said, your ability says you can manage more. You're going to manage a little less. But the point was they all got some. It says, so he gave them the money, then he went on the journey. Then the man who had received 5 bags of gold, took it at once, went at once, and put his money to work and gained 5 bags more. So somehow he took these 5 bags of gold, invested it, and then he earned 5 bags more of stuff. And so also the one that had 2 bags of gold gained 2 more. So he did something with the money that was entrusted to him, used it for the sake, for the benefit of the owner, and gained 2 more. But the man who had received 1 bag went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. Now, Justin does a great job explaining that whole thing. Figured out yet? No? Justin does a great job somewhere in cyberspace. He is explaining it. What did you do? Yes! You win the award! Yeah. Hi, I'm a pastor. I've got lots of degrees in the Bible, but I can't even figure out this stuff. Okay. So it is called buried. And if you're listening online, now you can go to mc3church.org as well and just click a little bit over and listen to buried. So, but Justin explained a lot more about this. I'm not going to go into it. But the man who received the 5 bags put it to work, invested it somehow, and then the man who received 2 invested it somehow, doubled his as well. But the third guy buried the money in the ground. Buried. Anyway, and we know there's a lot more context to what that means, and you can listen to that online. But the point was, he didn't do anything with it. He just kind of hid it. And so it goes on, the story continues and says, after a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. He's back. Okay, guys, how did you do? How did you manage my money? Because I gave it to you to manage. It wasn't yours. It wasn't yours to keep. It wasn't yours to spend for you. It was your job to manage it for me, to steward it for me. He returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received 5 bags of gold brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 bags of gold. See, I have gained 5 more. Well done, his master replied. Good and faithful servant. That was an exclamation point. Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. So the owner was pleased, obviously, that this guy had 5 bags of gold, did something with it, invested it, worked it so that he could gain 5 more for the master. Notice what he didn't do here. He didn't go and take the 5 bags from the master, invest it, gain 5 more, and then give the master 6 and keep 4 for himself. Not even 9 and keep 1 for himself, because it wasn't his. It was the master's. Even though he was the one that earned it, he was the one that multiplied it, it all belonged to the master. So he says, good job. I'm pleased with you. And he puts him in charge of greater things. And he says, share the master's happiness. And so there might be even context here of him getting something more, getting a gift, getting a perk for the fact that he did a good job investing that money. So this is the man with 2 bags also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 bags of gold. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant! Exclamation point. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come, share your master's happiness. Again, join the party. I am thrilled. You doubled the money I gave you. It was my money. You did a good job working it, managing it, stewarding it for me. So come, let's party. And here, you're going to be in charge of some more things. But then the man who had received 1 bag of gold came. Master, he said, I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your gold in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. And I'm not going to unpack that. There's a lot there. But the point being that the third guy just didn't do anything with it. He hid it. He squandered it. He wasted it. And here's the thing, right? He gave back what was given to him. Well, and what was the result? Well, the master said this, "You wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed? Well, then you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I return, you would have received it back with interest." So whatever these other guys did, it wasn't even that. They must have done something active with the money to earn, to double the money. He said, "You could at least put it in a bank so it would have gained interest." So the master was not pleased, even though the master said, "Look, here's one bag of gold." Time passes, and the servant gives back the master one bag of gold. The master wasn't happy with getting back with what he gave him. He wanted more. He wanted to see what he gave him be used for something, be managed for something, to be increased, to be grown. And so he was upset. He says, "You wicked lady servant." He then goes on and says, "Take the bag of gold from him and give it to the one who has 10 bags. For whoever has will be given more, and they will have an abundance." Again, not time to unpack it. "Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." A lot there. Listen to Buried Online. But the point is that the master was not pleased with what the last guy did. So displeased that he took what he had and gave it to the other guy, which is interesting. He gave him to the 10-bag guy. And I said, "Get out. Get out of my sight. I gave you stuff. I expected you to manage it. I expected you to use it for me, for my benefit. And you didn't even do that. Just go. Be gone. Get away." And he says, "Throw him outside." So it wasn't even just like, "All right, see ya. You know, pack up your bags. Get that little box that you get when you change jobs. Put everything in it." He was like, "No, take this guy and throw him outside." And the point being that these guys were stewards of what the master had given them, of what the owner had given them, and the last guy didn't manage it. He didn't do anything with it. He didn't invest it. He didn't use it. He didn't do a thing with it. He just buried it. So, that fancy church word is stewardship, and it means a few things for us. God owns it all, right? We know that. God owns everything. That's what he says. There's nothing left in that verse in Psalm 50 that isn't included. The world and everything in it. Everything. So stewardship means a few things. In this story, we see that the master, there were some things there that they counted on with the servant. The first thing is that trust is granted. That the master gave exactly what each person needed and trusted that they would use it. So some, it says that one guy got 5 because he apparently had a better ability in managing some things or whatever that was. One guy got 2, and then one guy got 1. But all of them, the master said, "I'm trusting you." There was a trust factor there, right? Because the guy, any of those guys could have just taken the bags of gold. Dude, the master's gone. He went away on a journey. They could have taken off and headed for Tarshish. Because that's the place you go when you're running away. And they could have done that. But they didn't. And the issue was that there was trust there. There's a factor that the owner, the master, says, "Look, I'm giving this to you because I'm going to trust that you're going to do the right thing with it. I'm giving this to you because I, not only do I trust that you can do the right thing with it, but I believe that you can do the right thing with it." And understand in this story that each of the guys got a different amount of money, but each one had the same expectation. So don't come to me after we're done or send me a message and say, "Well, I don't have as much, so therefore, I don't care." God has given you and me exactly what he wanted to give us to manage it for him, to use it. And there's a trust factor there that each of us have that. And we can waste it. We can squander it. The master wasn't too pleased in the parable. Throw him out. And I'm not implying that if we mismanage God's money, we're going to go to hell or anything like that. That's a lot of stuff that's packed in there. But I think there is something there about the master saying, "Hey, I've given this to you. I believe that you can do it." Whether you've got thousands of dollars saved, stashed away, invested, whatever, or whether you've got like $5 in your wallet, the money that you have is God's, and he trusts you. He believes that you can do it. He believes that you've got what it takes. So trust is granted. The second thing here is that management is expected. So the master trusted the people. God has trusted us with his stuff because it's all his. It all belongs to him. It's not yours. He has trusted it to us and trusted it to us. And the expectation is that we're going to manage it for him. When I go to the bank, and if Natalie happens to be my teller, I'm going to give her money with the expectation that she is going to manage it for me. That she is not going to take it and put it in her purse or put it in a box and then go out to lunch later with her friends. I'm trusting that she's going to take it and she's going to do what she's supposed to with it. That might mean simply keeping it safe in a vault or a computer account. It might mean putting it in a savings account where it's going to gain some interest. So I'm going to get that massive amount of interest from savings. It might mean she's doing something else with it, where she's putting it in a bond or an IRA or something like that, where it's going to gain interest. But the point is that I'm trusting that she's going to do it, and her job is to manage it. When you see her at the bank, her job is to manage it. When God has given us everything that we have, our job is to manage it. It's expected. It's expected. And manage it doesn't mean we're just going to take it and be gone. If I said, here, Natalie, could you please use this money and buy a $50 savings bond, and I think they cost like $25. I'll just say they do. And so I expect that after 8 years or whenever that matures, that I will have $50 in the savings bond. But if I come back 8 years later and Natalie's like, oh, well, I just stuck it in the drawer here. Here it is. Here's the $25 you gave me. I would be upset because I trusted it to her, and her job as the manager, as a person that manages money in a bank, is to invest it, to do what I told her with it. So management is expected. The amount of money, the amount of stuff, all of it's God's, that you have from him, no matter how big or how little, God expects you to manage it. God expects you to be the steward of it. God expects you to use it for his benefit, not for yours. For his benefit. And you know, we'll talk about this over the next few weeks. There's a lot of ways that can happen. And sometimes things that are for God's benefit, not sometimes, and we'll say this in just a second, but well, I'll just say the next point here is stewardship is that reward is waiting for each of these people. There was a reward waiting for them. The owner came back and said, wow, good job. Well done. Good and fit. Share in the master's happiness. Come enjoy the party. Because there was a reward there for the people that managed it well. And I will say to you that God has entrusted things to us. He says, I think you've got what it takes. You're expected to manage it. And if we do it well, I think there's a reward there for us. Sometimes that reward is going to be at the end. When we're not even going to know how we used God's money to do something where people came to know Christ in a personal way, followed him, and therefore had hope for eternity and were not going to hell. You don't know how God's going to use his money, how God's going to use you using his money to do that. That might be the reward, saying, see all these people here? And I'm going to Ray Bolts on you, right? See all these people here? That was because of what you invested. You see these kids in Oaxaca that are eating now and they're learning about Jesus? That's because of the money that you managed that God gave you. And sometimes it's going to be just, is your family, are things going well? That's just a blessing that God has used. Now, and this is really important. This is where, man, people on TV, church people on TV mess this up. Nowhere does it say that if you give 10, God will give you 20. Or if you give all of you, write a check now and suddenly happiness and good luck will come to you all. It does not happen that way. So that's what I'm saying. Sometimes your reward is going to be later. Sometimes you're going to sacrifice now and it's going to be like, oh, this was rough. And sometimes God is just full of grace. And so we're going to see benefits right away. We're going to see God working. And you all, please, please take a moment and just right now, just look around this room. Look at people in this room. I want you to know that you have been giving. And that giving has been put in a bucket. And our financial team manages it well. I hope they do. We keep an eye on that. But that's why there's a team. And because of the money that we're able to do the things that we do as a church, and because we're doing the things that we do as a church, people are growing closer to Jesus. People's lives and eternities are being changed for Jesus because of you. And you think, well, it's not that much money. God is using it. And there's rewards right now. Look around. There are people's lives that are being changed because of you. And that's, I think, a principle that is in this story. And please don't misunderstand. If you're giving because you expect to get more back from it, or it's some kind of like 30%, hey, I give this much and I get that much back, or automatically I'm happy, or somebody's going to come and donate, give me a car, or I'm going to win the lottery. That is not right. That kind of comes back to what God's issue was with the Israelites in Psalm 50. Like, if you're just doing it just because you expect something or because I need something, then you've messed up. But if we're giving because we know that God has trusted it to us, that it's expected that we manage it, there's somehow going to be a reward there. That's what Jesus was teaching in this parable. And sometimes, like I said, that reward might be instant. It might be now. We might get to see someone's face light up. We might not see anything. But if we keep doing what God has called us to do, if we keep managing it for His kingdom, someday, I promise you, there will be a reward. It's not yours anyway. It's God's. That's the point. It's not yours. It's not mine. The stuff that we have is not ours. It's God's. It belongs to Him. He's trusted it to us. We are His stewards. We are His managers. We are His bank tellers. Our job is to maintain, to manage the resources of the king until he returns. To manage them. To work them for his benefit. That's what we've been given. And I understand, like, I mean, we're Americans. This is a hard thing to teach to us, to me. Because our whole culture is built around money, credit cards, wealth, stuff, bling. I mean, pick it. That's buy this, buy the next thing. You know, I have a Kindle Fire HD. I love this thing. I got it last year for Christmas. Actually, it was my birthday. And I got an email from Amazon in August. So, what's that? About 12, 11, 10, 9, 8. So, yeah, about 8 months later. Oh, yeah, I could have done that. August is the 8th month. Anyway, about 8 months later, I get an email from Amazon telling me that my Kindle Fire HD, which I love, is now obsolete. Because there is now the Kindle Fire HD X. And the HD X is better. I don't know how it's better, because I was reading the description, and it sounds like what I've got, but somehow it's better. And they have told me that it's better. And I have found myself lusting after the Kindle Fire HD X, because it's better, and I don't even know why. Because we're in a culture that says more, says better, that says, you know, get it. You know what I'm saying? That whole concept. So that's what we get here as Americans, and it's hard for us to understand that none of this is ours. That this Kindle Fire HD is not mine. God has given it to me. And we can twist things to make them sound bad, to make them sound like they fit our purposes, but this has been a great ministry tool for me. It's saved a lot of money and paper and ink because I can just do this rather than have to print things out. It's got a lot of that, and you don't need to know all the details. But in a sense, I got this and saying, wow, this is a great way I can use this for God, for His kingdom, for ministry. And that's one of the reasons I wanted it. Now, it's cool. It plays videos and movies and stuff like that, too. Maybe that's a reward benefit for saying, hey, I'm doing something for God. I don't know. I don't want to get into that whole thing. But I understand that it's not mine. It's God's. And we're in a country, we're in a place in society, in the world, I guess, where we have this idea it is ours. And what you have is yours, and you better get better and get more and make it better and make it greater. And that goes exactly in the face of this idea that God has given you what you need. God has given you what you deserve according to your ability. God says, hey, you can do this. You're the steward. I'm giving it to you. You're the manager. And you can handle it. I believe in you. So it's not yours. So there's some things just to wrap up here. There's some things about it. Because it's not yours, you need to ask the owner a few things. It's not yours, yes, so, there we go. It's not yours, so we need to ask the owner how we spend it. It's not yours, so before you spend it, you probably should check with the owner because you're the manager of it. How should we spend this money? How should we spend the resources you've given us? And sometimes you spend it on you, and that's okay. But we need to be asking the owner how we spend it. And we're going to talk about that next week. The next question we need to ask the owner is how we save it. How do we save it? If it belongs to Him, how are we supposed to save it? What are we supposed to do with it? Do we keep it? Do we just sit on it? Do we grow our bank account bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger so that it's big and then we need to make it bigger so that it can be bigger? I don't know. I mean, we are, as a church, one of the things we're working towards, and I honestly, we want to have a 50-50 budget as a church, which means that half of the money that comes into MC3 stays in MC3, resources, salary, stuff like that, but then half is for use for outside, for reaching people, for helping people, loving our neighbor as ourselves. And I'm very keen on us. We could sit back and say, wow, we've got a $20,000 savings account as a church. And there's $20,000 that aren't being used for God's kingdom. And I have a problem with that. Now, it's important to save, and we're going to talk about that in 2 weeks. We're going to talk about saving and how we use our money. And then the third thing we need to ask the owner, if it's not ours, if it belongs to him, how do we give it? How are we supposed to give it? And in the last week of the series, we're going to talk about giving and what that looks like and what that means. And, you know, as Americans, some of this stuff is hard. And there's going to be challenges here, but it's not ours. It's not ours. It's God's. And so we need to say, okay, God, this is your stuff. How are we supposed to use it? We're just the managers. Let's pray. God, I thank you right now for each person in this room, and that honestly, we're wearing clothes and we're warm. And we might be a little hungry for lunch, but we're not starving. And we were able to get here, whether it was because we have a vehicle or we just have good shoes. And so, God, we do not take for granted what we have. I pray that we don't. But we understand that you are the one that has given it to us. All of our money, the earth, and everything in it belongs to you. And so I pray as we go through this series over the next month, that you would help us and help me, God, help to put aside our American materialistic mindset. There's nothing wrong with being American. You've given us things that are incredible, God. But help us not to let that get caught up, to get in the way of us using, stewarding, of managing your money the way you want us to. So open our eyes, open our hearts over this next month as we look at what your word says and as we grasp this idea that it's not ours, but it belongs to you. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.